5 UTC right after the international.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the November 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My opening serve for Wednesday's show is African Table Tennis. The second edition of the International Table Tennis Federation Africa Western Region Championships recently ended in Lagos, Nigeria. The four-day competition featured men's and women's players from Ghana, Benin, Togo, Liberia, Ivory Coast, and host country Nigeria. And they competed in singles, doubles, and mixed doubles in Nigeria's commercial capital. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the deputy president of the Africa Table Tennis Federation, Waheed Ashodi.
The aim of the Western Region Championships really is to get our players in the region, keep them in shape. We haven't had much to do due to the COVID protocols in the last year and a half. The last time we had the first edition actually was in Cote d'Ivoire 2 years ago. And we felt that we needed to do something to keep the players going. Also, on the ITTF side, this championships in the coming year would be the first round of the World Championships, you know, similar to what pertains in football, where we have like regional qualifiers and then African qualifiers before the World Championship. So it was good practice for us administratively, event management wise, just, you know, set up properly, get things done properly, and get practice in for our staff, you know, for the coming year. It turned out to be quite, you know, a great success, and we're very pleased about that. A lot of players came in, and the standard was very high. So that we're pleased about organizational wise, considering even, you know, adhering to the COVID protocols, we managed all that with the support of the Lagos State Government. That was excellent, and hopefully we'll be able to do that in the coming year, maybe somewhere else in West Africa. But at least we've got that done and sorted now.
Which country took the most titles?
7 countries, I think, took part in the tournament. Nigeria, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, Benin, Togo, Liberia, and Senegal. I think Senegal was a late withdrawal, but we had 6-7 countries, and you know, that out of the 15 countries, we haven't had, of course, one has to put that, you know, in perspective with the COVID protocols. Many countries still can't travel properly, and so 6-7 was a very good number, and you know, we're very pleased about that. Overall, the Nigerian team took I believe all 7 titles that were up at stake, and you know, the standard of Nigeria, as we all know, is quite a bit higher than most countries in the Western region. But it was quite tough in context of Nigeria fielded a team made up mainly of its junior players, national junior players. I mean, these are already top players. A couple of them have played for the senior national team at the last African Championships in Cameroon, and they did very well, winning medals there as well. So you know, the standard is high, but they really dominated. But it was good, and it was quite competitive. And we saw a few new players, you know, from the other countries. Gado from Ghana, young, talented left-hander, you know, great future for him, I believe. Of course, Kizito Obaoba, the defending champion, great talent in Africa, but you know, just seemed a bit out of sorts with the Nigerian players actually dominating him this time. He had a good tournament in Cameroon as well at the African Championships, pushing big stars like Omar and Harun all the way. So the talent, you know, is quite good. There's a massive pool of talent across the Western region, and we need to get them playing continuously. That of course was one of the aims of this: get them playing, you know, away from home, playing before big crowds. That you're not going to get a bigger crowd in table tennis except probably in China, than the Lagos crowd. You know, very, very excited about the whole tournament. So we've seen new players coming out, and that's good for the Nigerians as well. Even, you know, 14-year-old Hope Udoka, she was a revelation, you know, playing against much older women, and she just held her own, which is good to see that at least all the work these countries are putting in is bringing in the results. So we're quite pleased with that.
Did you discover new talents from the championships? And do you think they have potentials to compete in big events and championships?
Well, like I said, yes. I mean, the talents are there to see. And, you know, just to name a few, Samuel Boboye, Orok Etim, Hope Udoka, you know, these are the top. They already look like top talents. And I think, you know, the only thing is that, you know, you have to put in the work. You have to find the money to get them to the right training academies, get the right coaches for them, all this cost money. So one hopes that these countries will be able to support their players, you know, find the money to support the players. But in terms of talent, yes, it was really a good event for us in that we discovered quite many. And like I said, playing before the big crowds in Lagos, playing, you know, in a hostile atmosphere for some of the foreign players, they did well. And that bodes well for the future. So we're pretty pleased and quietly confident that the future is very bright for table tennis in this region of Africa.
That's Waheed Ashodi, the deputy president of the Africa Table Tennis Federation. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria. In African football, the former captain and coach of Nigeria's national men's team, Sunday Olise, published his autobiography earlier this year. The 47-year-old Olise is widely regarded as one of the best African midfielders ever. At the international level, Olise won gold medals while playing for Nigeria at the 1994 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Tunisia and the 1996 Olympic men's football tournament in the United States. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again as Iron Mike Mbonye asks Sunday Olise about his autobiography.
Well, the title of my autobiography is The Audacity to Refuse. It took me 2 years to assemble and get it into print. But in reality, for so many years, the idea of writing the book had been somewhere behind my head. The Audacity to Refuse kind of like is covering, the idea of the name is focused around the fact that The Audacity to Refuse just explains how I was able to get how far I did. The ability to refuse limitations and working hard in a positive mindset was how I was able to get as far as I did in my career.
What are the key points in the book you wrote?
The Audacity to Refuse shares my challenges and experiences in life, dating back from my youth, how playing also the challenges and the sometimes extreme painful difficulties I had playing as a color player in Europe, and also I was able to get up to play for top European club sites like Juventus and Torino, Ajax Amsterdam, Borussia Dortmund, FC Köln, amongst others. The books also covers how I was able to handle discrimination, and financial difficulties, the swindlers that we met along the way. And most importantly, a key point it covers also is it's life itself, not just football, but life, because football does not exist in isolation. Football is just a part of it. And the book itself, just the key points is just the challenges and how I was able to handle those ones, or the ones I failed to handle, and what I learned from the failures.
What lessons should young footballers learn from the book and from your experience?
I personally think, and it's one of the motivations of writing this book, is to share my past with young and upcoming players so that they can use our experiences to somehow facilitate their own journey in the world of football, and also in life itself. I think that footballers could pick from this how to handle discrimination, no matter what race one is from, how to handle limitations that you will face along your way because it's going to be there. And also as a young human being also, I think like my experiences can help people to also know how to handle those challenges that generally we don't talk about in public. And also the way to play and to think and the way to behave, not necessarily what to think, but how to play and think that will help one have a mindset as a footballer and also as a human being also to reach top football clubs. And also most importantly, the mindset we had that made us win and dominate in this sport and how we did it, the difficulties, and also how beautiful it is when we succeed. Because it's good to find out challenges, but I also show here the joys of winning and what those winning, you know, helped me achieve after we had won those things. I hope the hope is for people to learn a lot from it, to share my experience with people so that they can use it to their own benefit.
That's Sunday Olise, the former captain and coach of Nigeria's national men's football team, the Super Eagles. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Germany.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Olise, former captain and coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Sunday. And thanks also to Iron Mike Mbonye for that interview. Once again, Sunday Olise's autobiography is titled The Audacity to Refuse. And if you're interested in checking it out, I know it's available in paperback at Amazon.com. In African women's club football, Vihiga Queens of Kenya and Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa posted victories Tuesday at the inaugural CAF Women's Champions League tournament in Cairo, Egypt. In the first match of the day, the Kenyan Queens defeated AS FAR of Morocco 2-0. Violet Wanyoni and Gentrick Shikangwa scored the goals for Vihiga Queens. And in the second match of the day, Mamelodi Sundowns edged Rivers Angels of Nigeria 1-0 on a goal by team captain Zanele Nlapo. The Sundowns now lead Group B with the maximum 6 points from two matches. Vihiga Queens and AS FAR have 3 points each, and Rivers Angels have no points. Action is scheduled to resume on Thursday in Cairo with two Group A matches. Wadi Degla of Egypt will host Hasakas Ladies of Ghana, and AS Mandé of Mali will play Malabo Kings of Equatorial Guinea. Hasakas Ladies lead this group with the maximum 6 points, followed by Malabo Kings and Wadi Degla with 3 points each, and AS Mandé with no points. Taking a look at the CAF Women's Champions League schedule, the semifinals are on November 16th and the final on November 19th in Cairo.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports. In National Basketball Association action Tuesday night, the Utah Jazz and the defending NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks both posted victories. The AP's Dave Ferry tips off his report with the win by Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks.
Giannis Antetokounmpo provided 31 points and 16 rebounds for the Bucks in a 118-109 victory at Philadelphia.
Did a good job in the fourth quarter. Good job in the second quarter. Defending, rebounding the ball, boxing out. Move the ball, find an open guy. So we did some good things tonight.
Grayson Allen scored 25 points and hit a key three-pointer late in the fourth quarter. Bobby Portis added 19 points for the NBA champions, who are back at 500 after winning for just the second time in seven games.
Obviously, we have guys that's been out, guys that's in and out of the lineup and things like that, but we're here for the adversity. We're here for the challenge, and that's what makes us us, man. We don't make any excuses. We just take what's given to us and whatever's put in front of us and go out there and just ball.
Tyrese Maxey scored 31 points for the 76ers, who played without four-time All-Star Joel Embiid for the second straight game. Philly has dropped two straight since a six-game winning streak. Donovan Mitchell scored 27 points, and the Jazz shot 51% in a 110-98 win over the Hawks.
I just started on the defensive end. We were making shots, we're going back and forth, but, when we really honed in on our defense, got stops and ran, we pushed the lead open, and I think you saw that, especially in the fourth.
Bojan Bogdanovic and Jordan Clarkson each added 16 points, helping Utah beat Atlanta for the second time in 5 days. The Jazz scored baskets on seven straight possessions at one point in the second quarter and shot 12 of 18 from the field during the period to break open a close game. Kevin Huerter scored 28 points, and Trae Young added 27 for the Hawks.
We tried to, make it tough and battle. We just played hard. I think they made more plays than we did and a couple more shots. I had too many turnovers tonight. I can be better in my turnovers. But overall, I think my team did a great job playing hard.
Atlanta lost despite shooting 51% from three-point range. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. In one more NBA result Tuesday night, the Los Angeles Clippers beat the visiting Portland Trail Blazers 117-109. It was the fifth consecutive victory for the Clippers. Paul George scored a team-high 24 points for the Clips, while Damian Lillard delivered a game-high 27 points for the Trailblazers. In more NBA news, the league's reigning most valuable player, Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets, has been suspended for one game for shoving Markieff Morris of the Miami Heat in a game Monday night. That means Jokic won't be playing later Wednesday night when the Nuggets host the Indiana Pacers. Markieff Morris won't be playing Wednesday night either. Miami says he has a neck injury and will be sidelined for Miami's road game against the Los Angeles Lakers. The NBA also fined Morris $50,000 for his role in the on-court altercation. The Nuggets won the game 113-96. Both Morris and Jokic were ejected from the contest. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. In U.S. men's college basketball, this is the final season for Duke University's Hall of Fame coach, Mike Krzyzewski. The 74-year-old Krzyzewski, nicknamed Coach K, says he'll be retiring. Coach K has led Duke to 5 national titles since 1980. And let's not forget Coach K's work with Team USA at the Olympics. He coached the USA to gold medals at Beijing 2008, London 2012, and Rio de Janeiro 2016. On Tuesday night, Coach Krzyzewski and the Blue Devils of Duke tipped off their season with a victory at Madison Square Garden in New York City. The AP's Tom Merriam reports.
Duke, ranked 9th in the AP's preseason college basketball poll, tipped off the new season with a 79-71 victory over 10th-ranked Kentucky in the second game of the Champions Classic at Madison Square Garden. Number 3 Kansas won the opener 87-74 over Michigan State. The Blue Devils were led by 2 freshmen. Guard Trevor Keels topped all scorers with 25 points, while forward Paulo Banchero added 22 to begin Mike Krzyzewski's final season as Duke's head coach.
Playing against an outstanding team, I mean, they're tough, and we're tough. That was a big-time game.
In the earlier game, Kansas rode senior Ochi Obagi's 29 points to a win over the Spartans.
It was a lot of fun. Great way to start off the season, but I can only just thank my teammates for it. They found me around the court, found me for lobs and stuff, found me out in transition, so I can only thank them.
Tom Merriam, New York.
The World Health Organization calls diabetes a major cause of blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, stroke, and lower limb amputation. This is Rick Pantaleo. Please join Dr. William Cefalu, MD, from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, and me when we talk about diabetes on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Be sure to listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm Donald Drukari, the president of the Ghana Olympic Committee and chair of National Council of Sports. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In African men's volleyball, Tunisia successfully defended its African title in September in Kigali, Rwanda. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2021, let's go back to Kigali and hear the report from Eugene Uimana. Sporty greetings, Eugene!
Sporty greetings, Sunny! The powerhouse Tunisians captured their 3rd consecutive African title here in Kigali. In a rematch of the 2019 final, the Tunisians once again beat Cameroon. Cameroon started strong, winning the first set 25-16. But Tunisia rallied and won the next 3 sets by scores of 25-21, 25-21, and 25-16. It was Tunisia's 11th African title in men's volleyball. Egypt finished the 3rd overall and went home with a bronze medal. Morocco placed the 4th. Uganda 5th, and host Rwanda 6th. Rwanda's Minister of Sports, Aurore Mimosa Munyangaju, thanked the players for showcasing Africa's talent and congratulated the winners.
On behalf of the government of Rwanda, I would like to extend to you and the Africa volleyball family our heartfelt appreciation for the 1 week excitement you have displayed during these games. To our African champions tonight, congratulations, you are the best that Africa has.
African champion Tunisia and runner-up Cameroon had already clinched places at next year's World Championships in Russia by reaching the final. Boucheha Hajiji, the president of the African Volleyball Confederation, urged both teams to make Africa proud. She also promised to continue support to other African teams. I wish you excellent performance. Be the best representatives of African continent. For the remaining players, we are behind you to support your development. move forward and grow together. The 23rd edition of the Men's African Volleyball Championship attracted the 16 national teams that were drawn into four groups. Group A, Rwanda, Burkina Faso, Burundi, and Uganda. Group B, Tunisia, Nigeria, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. Group C, Cameroon, DR Congo, Mali, and Niger. Group D, Egypt, Morocco, Tanzania, and Kenya. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Eugene Uwimana in Kigali, Rwanda.
Thanks, Eugene. England and Manchester United footballer Marcus Rashford has been honored for fighting hunger and child poverty, as we hear now from VOA's Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In the summer of 2020, Manchester United and England forward Marcus Rashford called on the British government to make a U-turn and reverse its decision to end free meal school vouchers during the coronavirus lockdown. In an open letter, Rashford shined a spotlight on families existing on what he called a knife's edge while struggling to feed their children. In response, the government made that U-turn and extended a national voucher scheme to feed children from low-income families. On Tuesday, the 24-year-old was recognized for his work in helping vulnerable children and made a member of the Order of the British Empire. And after accepting the award, Rashford told reporters, the honor far exceeded his wildest dreams.
You know, when I was a kid, I never really, you know, it wasn't something that I dreamt about. It wasn't something that, you know, feels achievable. But, you know, I've obviously been trying to spread positive messages to young kids, and me receiving this today is another message for them, because I think now they can see even things that you don't think are achievable, are achievable.
The MBE is the third highest ranking Order of the British Empire Award and is given to someone who has made a positive impact through their work. Rashford received the honor from Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge, at Windsor Castle. And upon their meeting, the two men couldn't help but talk a little football.
We're just speaking about the Euros and a little bit about, you know, the response, what it was like after, how good it was to see everyone come together and support the team. Other than the football, he was speaking about the campaign and how pleased he is that I started it, and you know what's next. And it's not the first time I've actually met him. I've met him a few times and had a few conversations with him, and you know, he's a really good person, so it was nice that I was able to receive the honour from him too.
The issue of free meal vouchers is one that is very close to Rashford's heart. As a young boy, he had to rely on breakfast clubs and free meals. In his open letter last year, Rashford wrote that as a black man from a low-income family, he could have been just another statistic had he not had the support of his mother. And on Tuesday, Rashford said, along with previous awards he's received for his charity work, his latest medal will be given to his mom.
She's obviously a huge inspiration. You have to remember, I have two brothers and two sisters all older than me, and she's a single parent throughout the whole way of that. So however bad it is for us, it's 10 times worse for her. So any awards that I've got really from the charitable things that I've been doing, including this one, they're all in her house, and this one will go in her house as well.
Rashford says his charity work will continue throughout his football career, and he vowed to stay involved after his playing days are over.
Hopefully, everything should be in place by the time I retire. But, you know, that's many, many years away. So whilst I'm still playing, I'll still be doing it, and hopefully we can find a cause for the problem and eradicate it.
Rashford can now add his MBE to the honorary doctorate given to him last month from the University of Manchester for his campaign against child poverty and his outstanding achievements in football. He is the youngest ever recipient of the university's highest honor and joins fellow Manchester United club legends Sir Alex Ferguson and Sir Bobby Charlton as a recipient of the prestigious award. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the November 10th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.